now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your houseplants, anything in the outdoors, plant-wise, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. It is Saturday morning, and we get together and have a discussion about what's impacting your yards, your plant material, and everything else. And do you need to do a raised bed space, or what's going on here? Do your house plants need more fertilizer, or do they need less fertilizer than the plants that are outside? And what is a potting mix, and how do you improve your soils outside? Should you be looking for bugs? Should you be looking for diseases this late? Should you be pruning and shearing and all those kind of things? Well, the information I'll share with you hopefully will make you or enable you to make some really good decisions and solidify your options. And that final judgment on the action you're going to take is going to be on your shoulders. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another important player is James. He's back producing the show. He answers the phone. All he needs is your first name, and that's pretty much it. He doesn't need to know what you're calling about or anything else. Oh, and by the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been doing the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation. I call it a walk and talk. If you'd like, you can go, you're probably better off just to call and leave a message that way. But you can go to my website and leave an email. My computer is still down, if you can believe that. I must be just so stupid. Anyway, you can. My wife, Tracy, she has a tablet, and she can get into my email, and I can get in contact with you that way. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Oh, let's see. Where am I going to go today for my good gardening stroll? Well, I ended up at where Connecticut and Spring cross. The area is named Tower Grove Heights, and it has all kinds of visual flavors all over the place. And I decided to walk west down Connecticut. The crickets were singing. The rain has stopped. The sky was peppered with all kinds of multiple layers of clouds. And there was welcoming joggers and walkers and dog walkers and all kinds of other people. The first yard right at that intersection, the smell of sweet autumn clematis, which was using a crepe myrtle as its trellis. And they also had many canna plantings as well. And along with that was some golden vicary privet hedges. Boy, this is kind of a unique combination of things. A little bit more steps down the street, a young ginkgo tree is trying to settle in as a street tree, while sweet gums and maples and other trees have been there for quite a long time. There's liriope along the way. There's lamb's ear, hydrangeas, iris. And then there's a neighbor that has some ground cover, no lawn, just a ground cover of ivy. There's boxwood. Then next, there's some hostas, and there's some azaleas and purple coral bells. And two different types of hydrangeas. And a little bit further down, ajuga, nandina, dogwood. Lots of pots sitting up on people's porches and on their steps as well. There's a pretty good-sized magnolia there. Really, the buds are really, for next spring, really starting to fill in. And there's a variegated periwinkle as a ground cover. And it'll give you the blue flowers in the springtime as well as a variegation for the rest of the season because it is evergreen. There's iris. There's coreopsis. And then there's the next house has a mimosa tree in it. And some sweet autumn clematis starting to climb up that mimosa tree. A crabapple, a hibiscus. There's some caged tomato plants on the second floor porch. And that's to keep the squirrels away because there is a lot of squirrels there. You walk underneath the oak trees, you can see where the squirrels have been eating a bunch of acorns. And there's further down near the end of the block, there is a yard that has a red bud. And then there's a yard that has a banana tree and some elephant ears. And the unique thing, as I turned around and headed back towards my car, I ran into the gentleman, he was walking his dog, that lives in that house that has the banana tree and the elephant ears. And so it was just kind of a great, you know, just kind of a normal type of walk that I usually do. But for the Good Gardening Stroll today, it was Connecticut going west down to Justine, and that's in between Spring and Justine. So a lot of different kinds of plants. Now, on the other side of the street, there was also different kinds of plants and trees and everything else. This was just on the north side of Connecticut. So anyway, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Serving St. Louis for over 96 years. KMOX.
Yes, folks, I woke up about 4:30 or so, and I looked out the window, and it was raining pretty hard. I went, oh. Because, I mean, taking the Good Gardening Stroll in the rain is not all that bad. It's just a little difficult to make some notes. And then also today, after the show, I'm headed out to Manchester, so I didn't want the people to think, oh, it's raining, so he probably won't show up. Whenever I have something scheduled at your home, rain or not, I'll be there, rain or shine. And a lot of times I've had a circumstance where it has been raining, and actually that's been a benefit, you know, to like kind of let everybody take a look at what's going on in their yard and relationship to rainfall and everything else. And those kind of things just happen. Well, let's head over to Mary Ann's yard. Hi, Mary Ann. Mary Ann, are you there?
I am here. Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm looking to see if you could give me some tips on separating and maybe relocating some hostas we have out back.
Basically, you can. You got about 2 months or so, or 2.5 months. You can just basically start digging them up now if you want to. If aesthetically they still look good and you want to leave them for a couple more weeks, you can certainly do that. The best thing to do is dig up the whole clump. You can cut off the foliage if you want. You can do that either right after you dig them up, or you can do it right after you get them located in a new location. Just make sure that you don't plant them too deep, because sometimes that can be detrimental to any kind of plant material for sure. But so just watch out. Have the area that you're moving them to already prepared. Realize that if you're moving them to an area that's underneath a lot of larger mature trees, for the shade factor, sometimes that can be a little bit tough on plants that are newly, let's say, divided or transplanted or whatever.
Right, because they're currently in exposed sun, so if I was to move them in shade, that could be a little more traumatic of a transition for them, maybe?
No, it'd probably be, thank goodness, because they get sunburnt in the sun, so they prefer, they're a shade plant, they're not a sun plant at all.
Okay, what about the white foliage or the flowering shoots? Is that really a benefit to put them back at a certain point? Does that help the foliage?
No, it doesn't really help the foliage. The foliage is already formed and everything else. All it does is make it so it the spent flower stem is aesthetically sometimes not all that nice. You don't have to cut it back. It's a personal choice as much as anything.
It's just more work than if I didn't need to do it, I wasn't going to. Okay. I thought about trimming them back. I thought someone told me that the plant itself thrives better and it's taking more of the, I don't know, energy or whatever from it.
No, I mean, when it's in flower, all any plant, any tree, any shrub, any perennial or whatever, it takes extra energy to flower. But once the flowers are finished, then there's nothing, the stem doesn't do anything.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. I appreciate it. We'll get it started. I just wanted to know the time of the year, too, and you're saying now is a good time to split some of those up and relocate.
Yeah, probably the best thing to do is a day or two before you're going to, dig them up and divide them. Water them pretty well, and then, just dig them up, and you want to go about one spade deep or one shovel deep. And it's going to be, it's going to be a little bit heavy, but that's not that much of a big deal.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for your advice.
Sure. Thanks, Mary Ann. And now let's head from Mary Ann's yard over to Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Yeah. Hey, we're heading into the cooler time of the year, cooler temperatures, sustained humidity. So what are the things I can best do now to have a great lawn in the spring?
Do you have a cool season lawn or a warm season lawn?
Cool season lawn. It's fescue and bluegrass.
Yeah. Basically, the core aeration is really good if you haven't done it before. And if you prefer not to do that, at least go out and rake all the, let's say, the summertime thatch out of your lawn. And then, you know, if you do core aerate, spreading compost after you core aerate, and what happens is when you spread it afterwards, then the compost falls down in those holes from the core aeration, and it just makes your soil healthier, better, mm-hmm. and you'll have a better, you know, opportunity to have a halfway decent lawn, because lawns here are very difficult because we're in that transition zone. And this would be the time, too, if you want to put some additional grass seed out, you do that kind of in the same sort of sequence.
Okay, I take it you're not a fan of fertilizer?
No, you can definitely do, if you're going to do fall, you know, fall feeding is perfect. No, I'm totally believe into that. But healthy soil, fertilizer doesn't really help your soil. But the soil is really crucially important. You could have all the nutrients you want, but if you have really poor soil, so let's say the classic St. Louis metropolitan area clay soil, fertilizer is not going to make that soil have any, you know, really good plant growth, you know, coming up and out of it.
Okay. And is there any type of fertilizer you can suggest?
I would probably, you know, look at some of this. If you like to kind of just have it... if you haven't had a soil test, that's you probably should get that. It may be a little bit too late to get it for this year, but consider getting one in the future, because if you have been fertilizing in the past and you've been using, let's say, the same type fertilizer, you may have extremely extravagant levels of certain nutrients, which could be detrimental to whatever you happen to be trying to grow. So a soil test just, you know, kind of sends you down the right road.
All right. So we want to correlate, rake and thatch, compost after correlation, seed, and at some point we need to do a soil test so to see what the nutrient balance is.
Right. And as far as the raking goes, that would be just something if you decide not to get the core aeration, because a lot of times when you're trying to schedule, if you haven't already scheduled it, some of the landscape or the lawn services are already overly booked, and you know it may be a little bit late to do it, because you can actually do it all the way up until the ground freezes, but people, you know, sort of mentally, they're not really into it doing it, you know, later and later into the season.
Yeah. Is it better to seed in the fall or in the spring, or would
fall
you suggest
is,
doing both?
Fall is by far the best.
Fall the best, okay.
Right. Fall is the best for planting, you know, seed for planting plants or anything, because the ground is warm. That triggers the seed germination. That triggers root system growth. And then they get to go more or less asleep for the wintertime, where in the springtime, the ground is cold, it's slow. It's a slow process to get actively going, and then they're faced with our summertimes, and our summertimes can be really difficult for plant material.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I'll get to it. got a narrow window here. Looks like I may not know. Correlation, I guess that's what they used to call aeration.
Yeah, core is just you're pulling. You know, aeration was the days of old where they used to just have machines that kind of just plugged holes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with core aeration, you're actually taking like a wine bottle cork out of the ground that opens it up. That's much better for it, just because those spikes that used to just aerate in theory would just compact the soil around that aeration point, and that would be, you know, problematic.
Okay, so you're saying it's a larger opening, which is better, is what you're saying.
Right, and it's not compacted around it, because it's pulling a plug up out of the ground as opposed to just pushing something in.
Now, do they have machines that do that, or is that a larger? I remember when I was younger seeing something that looked like a pogo stick that you thrust down in the ground, about 2.5 inches in diameter. Now, is this, you're talking about something smaller than that?
Oh, yeah, much smaller. This is going to be like
champagne cork.
Yeah, like a wine bottle cork size.
A wine bottle cork, right. Okay. So you have them. Oh, I know what they use those. They use those for Zoysia clubs years ago. That's
right,
what that was, I think. Yeah,
they sure did.
The larger one. Yeah, that's what that was. I probably still do. I don't know if that's something, you know. So anyway, okay. So the correlation. Okay, very good.
Right.
I'll look into that, see who can do that for me.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and just, talk to the lawn service. And, again, core, C-O-R-E, core aeration.
Core aeration.
Right.
I was calling it correlation. I need to get a hearing aid. Well, you know, I mean, it's a new term. There's
right.
a reason
yeah,
for the
it's
term.
A, it's a brand new language.
But it's, yeah, core aeration. Okay. Well, it's you're in the entertainment business. I'm sure a lot of people are having a good laugh over this one right now. But that's okay. That's all right.
Yes.
There's no reason this can't be fun, right?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay. Well, listen, you have a safe holiday.
Okay. You do the very same thing.
And go Cardinals.
Yes. And if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Albert Pujols comes to bat. Cardinals slugger Albert Pujols talks with Tom Ackerman Mondays at 9:50.
He hits a fly ball left field, and it's gone!
Exclusively on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go, and we're headed over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann. Hello, Ann, are you there?
And we're headed over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I guess my question may have been answered with all the correlation questions. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. My question is, though, I want to corerate before I fertilize. Do I have to seed or mulch necessarily? Can I just corerate and then fertilize?
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, you don't have to put the compost down afterwards. It's just benefits your soil and the fertilizer. Just make sure you're getting a fertilizer, for this time of year for the type of lawn that you have.
Okay, that's what my question, because I really don't need the seed and compost, but I just want to check and be sure. Okay, thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and again, the compost benefits your soil, so that's the whole idea of the compost. It does have some nutrients related to it, but for the most part, it's all kinds of different organic things playing a role in making your soil better so you can have a better lawn. So, Teresa, how are you today?
Good morning. Mike, I really enjoy your vividly descriptive walk and talks. So thank you for that. But I've got this beautiful, healthy hibiscus plant, Mother's Day. Can you tell me any tips on how to winter over it for next spring?
So is this a tropical type hibiscus, or is this one that's a hardy variety that can be planted outside?
Good grief, I don't know.
So are the flowers big, like of 6 or 8 inches across, or are they, relatively, 2 to 3
They're
inches?
Smaller, and it's been giving me, like, they only last a day, but I've been getting, like, 5 to 7 blooms a day. So
okay.
They're smaller. They're like a maybe teacup size.
Okay. And, I'm assuming then this is a tropical one. Just realize that, that would be something that would probably classically be given on Mother's Day. But the hibiscus, once you bring them inside, if this is a tropical variety, it needs to come inside because it cannot survive outside. They don't like it inside, to be honest with you. So just expect the flowering to stop and a lot of the foliage, a lot of the leaves to drop off.
Okay. So what do I do, like cut down on the watering and no fertilizing?
Definitely no fertilizing. Put it in as close as you possibly can to a really bright, sunny window. And you can turn the pot every week or so to make sure that all the foliage all the way around the plant can get some sun. And just kind of keep your fingers crossed.
Can I use a grow light?
Yeah, that would certainly help.
Yeah, are there any specific grow lights for different types of plants?
No, not for the most part. They're, the spectrum of most of the grow lights are just a sort of a broad spectrum of lights, and that enables it to, you know, kind of make sure if you're growing an orchid or if you're growing a cactus or if you're growing a succulent or you're growing a hibiscus or a schefflera or philodendron, whatever it happens to be.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Exactly.
And thank you and your staff.
Well, thank you and for having me on your show. And now let's head over to Bonnie's yard. Hi, Bonnie.
Oh, hi. Actually, it's my mom's yard. I'm visiting her for Labor Day weekend, and she has one of the oldest trees in Lincoln County, and it's a catalpa. And it's dropped those seed pods, and I would like to grow a catalpa from her seeds. Could you tell me all I need to know about that?
Basically, just, you know, you got the big pod, and just leave it alone. Don't do anything with it. Probably take a couple pods and just, you know, kind of wrap them up in newspaper and just let them alone. And then next spring, go ahead and open the pod, take a look at the beans, because there is going to be beans in there. They're in the, you know, basically the pea family. And then those beans is what you're going to try to grow, and just get a potting mix for starting plant material and grow them that way.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Is there a location in particular for a catalpa? Anything I need to do in terms of shade, sun?
Well, initially,
fertilizer?
You're just going to be growing it in a pot for a couple of years until it gets to be, you know, at least adequate size that you know the bean or the, you know, is going to actually stay alive. But you don't have to worry about planting it or anything else. So probably for the first 2 or 3 years, start it off in maybe like a 4-inch pot, again, with a potting mix for starting plant material. And then after a year or two, then put it up into a 6-inch pot. And then during the wintertime, what you're going to do with those pots is they're going to be outside, and they're going to be, you know, put into a hole into some kind of garden space. That's the best thing you can possibly do. And then after probably 3 or 4 years, it may be, let's say, 15 to 18 inches tall. Then you could decide where you want to plant it. But they're going to do much better if they're in a sunny location. Definitely don't plant them in close proximity to any larger mature trees.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see. Yeah, catalpa trees, this is the time of year when they start dropping the bean pods. I think as kids we call them lady cigars or something. I don't know why we call them lady cigars, but anyway. So thanks, Bonnie, and now let's head over to Suzanne's. Hi, Suzanne.
Good morning. I have some phlox that are still partially blooming. They're about 30 inches tall, and I want to share some of them with a friend's garden. And I wondered if this was a good time of the year to transplant some of those.
You could certainly do it. You might wait for another week or so, but you could do it now. Just make sure that she has the sunny garden space, the soil ready, and so when you take it to her, then she can, you know, put them in the ground pretty much ASAP. So all you need to do is make sure that there's some stems and root system in the division or the clump. Cut the, you know, you can leave the foliage if you want, but definitely cut the flowers off of any of them that you're giving to her, because it's not really all that bad, but it's just going to, you know, kind of aesthetically look bad, because the flowers are really going to go downhill real quickly because you dug them up, and that may be, let's say, psychologically detrimental to her.
That was going to be my other question, if it would be helpful for the plant or the roots themselves to just cut the stems maybe halfway down.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, the stems, the foliage is not really going to do too much. It's just, I'm saying leave some of the stems, some of the leaves, just so she knows where it is. That way she won't be walking through her garden and step on it. It really won't hurt it that much, but it's just, you know, kind of a psychological type thing.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. And now let's go to Jeannie's. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. I had a question about building up a flower bed in the front of the house. So just kind of, do you have any pointers on that? Just want to raise it up a little bit, like maybe 4 or 6 inches.
Basically, you don't have to really do anything. If you want to, you can just add, let's say, like a compost topsoil mix. Mix it in with the, kill everything off in the area. If this is a space that doesn't have, is a lawn area now? Is that what it is? Or is it a garden space?
It's already flower, the shrubs and flowers. We're just going to take everything out and redo it, refresh it, and thought we'd build it up a little.
Yeah, I mean, then all you need to do is pull the stuff out, like you already know to do, and then just add a couple inches of the compost topsoil mix and mix it in with the existing soil.
Okay.
And then you can put an edger on it if you want to. You don't have to. I mean, you could put a shovel cut edge, so you don't have to have something physical around it. It's going to stay higher just because you added physical material to it.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. And do you have to till it together or?
Well, you got to shovel it. You got to blend it. If you don't blend it, you can't just lay it on top of the, you know, the existing soil. It's got to be blended together.
Somehow blend it together. Okay.
Right.
All right. Very helpful. Thanks so much.
Yep. And I mean, that's really, it's really benefit of the plant material. So thanks, Jeannie. Yeah, when I worked at the botanical garden, the woodland garden was, you know, kind of put in, but it wasn't, you know, in a raised bed circumstance. And so the 5 years I was there, I spent a lot of the time, you know, adding organic matter to the existing soil space and to raise the beds, you know, raise the bed space up to benefit, you know, the azaleas, the rhododendrons, the perennials, the columbine, the pachysandras, and everything else that was growing in the woodland garden. So that was, I pulled some of it, you know, like what you're talking about, pull out the existing stuff, improve the soil, raise it up, and then put, you know, the existing stuff back in as well as new plant material. So Mike Miller, K, NYS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Let's head back to the phones and go to Debbie's yard. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, how are you doing? Good morning.
Very good.
I have a question about my violet. I've had it for about 16 to 20 years. I have three of them. My mom gave them to me a long time ago. And the root is coming out of, it keeps coming out of the soil and it curl around like a snake. They bloom. They constantly bloom all the time. Should I keep burying the root or is that okay for it to stem out like that and curl?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. African violets are pretty tough, pretty durable. And doing something like that's not going to be detrimental to them.
So I should let them just grow out?
Yeah.
They're in a big pot. I don't know how long their roots really are, but they are in a large pot.
Well, as old as these are, they're probably going to have pretty substantial roots. And, I mean, you know, the size of the pot is going to restrict somewhat the size of the root system. But for the most part, if they're healthy, they're still flowering, the foliage looks good and everything else, just don't fool with them because you start piling soil up on, you know, to bury the root systems and you could get up to where you're getting the crown. So in other words, where the leaf and the root system intersect and meet. And if you bury that, that could be detrimental.
Okay. I'll just let them swirl around and do what they're doing then.
Right.
And I have one more question.
Sure.
What's your opinion on artificial plants for outside?
Artificial plants outside, PU, they stink. No, I mean, it's
really?
It's a personal choice. I don't care if there's something that you really are not able to grow for whatever reason. If you want to have an artificial plant, that's fine.
They hold up through the winter. Have you ever had any experience with them?
Well, they fade. It depends upon the, you know, I've never had them myself. But I've seen them that, you know, people have had them, let's say, sitting on their front porch for a while. They start fading after a couple years due to the sunlight and things like that. But you just make sure that the pot that they're in is anchored enough and have enough weight that when there's strong winds or something, it doesn't blow them over. And that's pretty much
it. I'm going to bury them.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a beautiful boxwood, and I mean, they're costly, but I'm going to bury the whole pot in the ground in the front yard in my bed that I have in the front yard.
Well, great.
And can you tell from the sidewalk that they're artificial when you do your walks?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, sometimes I have to give a double look, but maybe the first time I go by, I can't tell. But if I go by and there should be some active growth showing, and let's say the artificial plant is still the exact same size, not producing any kind of extended growth or anything, then I can tell.
Okay, I gotcha. But I don't have a green thumb except for my violets. But I was just wondering what your opinion was.
No, it's...
But I'll leave those violets alone, and I'm just going to bury that pot and never have to worry about it again.
Well, good luck.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Yep. And let's see. Diane, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes. I'm planting some rhododendrons probably today. I've got rocky clay soil. I will ask about the soil in a minute, but should I use a root stimulator?
Now, I probably wouldn't. I would prepare the soil more so than I worry about a root stimulator, because azaleas are really kind of touchy as far as their ability. And if this is clay, rocky soil, I don't know if they're going to have much chance of surviving, to be honest.
Well, they're in places where I had huge rhododendrons that I took out then a couple years ago. And so I want to plant new ones in the same general area.
Okay, then that's fine.
What should I do to the soil?
I would add a compost and probably some topsoil, kind of raise the area up and make sure when you plant the azaleas that the top part of the root ball is slightly above the surrounding ground, and then, you know, put an inch or two of mulch over the top of the root ball.
Okay. And you say add compost. I have some topsoil I purchased, I have potting soil, and I have peat moss. Are any of those the right thing, or do I need to go out and get compost?
Well, you could go out and get compost, but peat moss is the best thing out of all those.
Oh, okay.
But so make sure you blend it in with the existing soil.
Right. And if I'm adding some soil, should I use the potting soil, or should I use the topsoil that I purchased to mix with peat moss?
Well, if the topsoil is in a plastic bag and it is really heavy and dense, that's not really going to be to the detriment, or that's not really going to be to the benefit of the azalea, because it's going to be too dense. That's going to hold too much moisture, and it could be detrimental to their root system. So that's why you have to watch out about the density of what you're adding to the ground. So,
okay.
I mean, if the rock, and hopefully the rock is not any kind of limestone related rock, because that is alkaline. And that's, you know, detrimental. Also planting, but if you've had, you know, rhododendrons growing in that basic area and had great success with them, then there's not an alkalinity problem.
Okay. So maybe use more the potting soil and mix it with the peat moss.
Right, exactly.
And get it in there. Okay. Any other things I should do to it?
Nope. Just make sure that you mulch it. And just kind of make, and for the first couple of weeks, if we have extended periods where there's no rainfall, you know, water, you might have to go out and water it every couple of days just because you don't want it to go through any kind of drought stress whatsoever during this establishment period.
Okay. And then I do have an evergreen fertilizer. I forget if it's Hollytone or something like that. Should I put that down when I fertilize the rest of my evergreens?
No, don't fertilize it for the first year.
Okie doke.
First growing season, let's put it that way.
Great. Okay. So not even in the spring then?
No, you could do it in the spring if it, you know, as the buds open up.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after the news.
Now, at your service.
Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, thank goodness. I'm certainly glad to hear that Greek Fest has returned. There's nothing like spanakopita. Tracy and I love the Greek food, and you know, the couple years that we weren't able to go to it, that was really kind of sad, but now it's back. There's one in West County, too, but we like the one there in the West End. Anyway, It's the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, cares for it, ups and downs, your annuals, your bulbs, you can buy those spring flowering bulbs. It's a little bit too early to be planting them, though, so just keep them in the paper bag they came in or whatever. And so edibles, your cool season edibles, your broccolis and cauliflowers and lettuces and spinach and stuff, ground covers, house plants, lawns. Your cool season lawn is the time. This is the time of year where activity takes off, and in warm season, your zoysia just kind of is going to go sleepy, but it is not sleeping yet. My zoysia is still very active growing. I'm still mowing it and everything else, and I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take towards success, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board, James, he's producing. He answers the phone. He'll just need your first name when you call. I do landscape consulting during the week and on weekends both, and consequently, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and send me an email. And even though my computer's down, my wife's tablet is up, and we can get we'll get the information, your phone number, and I'll call you back as opposed to doing it some other way. So it makes it really difficult for me. I don't want to say who's causing this problem other than me and my stupidity, but other than that. So the walk and talk today, I'm headed out to Manchester. So it should be fun, and kind of out of West County where I grew up. I grew up further west than that, but anyway. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, the Green Center, that's a not-for-profit organization that's located in University City on Blackberry Avenue. They have a flower market every Wednesday and Thursday from 9 to 12, and that will be through the entire month of September. So the Green Center, you can just go to greencenter.org and find out more information if you like, but every Wednesday and Thursday, they're going to have the flower market, and they've got some really unique stuff. You know, it's really kind of a fun thing just to go to. And again, 9 to 12, Wednesday and Thursday only. So, and like I said, go to thegreencenter.org for more information. And why don't we take a call or two before we go to a break? Let's go to Beth's yard. Hi, Beth.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question about a problem with a redbud tree. We have it almost looks like a cocoon, but it looks like a spider web with a bunch of little worms inside, and it's been on several branches, and the branches are dying. And wondered, other than we did cut the branches off, what else we can do to keep that from happening?
Probably nothing to do to keep it from happening. You really didn't have to cut the branches off. All you had to do is sort of disrupt the it was probably some kind of sawfly type thing. Was it eating the leaves, or was it just kind of a webbing thing? They were
It was eating the leaves, or they would turn brown.
Right.
And the webs were like the size of a grapefruit. They were large.
They're really big. I haven't had them on like redbud trees or something, but I had some on a mugo pine, and they were really eating the needles just crazy. And what I did is I just went after them with a horticultural vinegar, and I just tore out. Went out and just tore all the webbing up, apart, and squashed a bunch of them with my fingers and all that other kind of stuff, and finally got rid of them.
Okay, so what should we spray?
You can just use any kind of insecticide that you choose.
Just
make sure that it penetrates through the webbing. That's kind of where the problem is. That's why I ended up, I used a little bit of insecticide, but I did realize that it was just going to be easier just to kind of tear the thing apart with my hands and squash them all with my fingers.
Okay, these were like pinpoint. They were just developing, I guess. There were like 25 inside, but they were very tiny. So there's nothing we should feed the tree with.
No, there's nothing that's going to, I mean, as far as putting us, let me ask you this. How old is this tree? How big is this, you know, this redbud tree?
Okay, it's about 10 years old and 30 feet.
Okay, so it's pretty darn big.
Uh-huh.
And so even, I mean, you could go out there and just, if you have a good nozzle on your hose, you could knock them apart that way.
Okay, rather than cutting off the branches.
Right, yeah, cutting off the branches, I wouldn't bother doing that.
Okay. And there are white spots on some of the branches. Is that related to these little worms?
No.
This
is probably a lichen, so this is just a natural, you know, occurrence that happens on bark.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, and we so appreciate your show up here in Northeast Missouri.
Whoa. So are you in Canton? Is that where you are?
Right on the river.
All right.
Close to Keokuk, 45 minutes north of Hannibal.
Wow. You're way up north. Is it snowing yet?
Oh, no. In fact, we have a severe drought.
Ooh.
And we so wish we got some of the rain you all did in St. Louis.
Right, yeah. Drought is a horrible circumstance. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
Good luck with that. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, will be back after these messages.
Connect with KMOX on air, online. 1120 AM, 98.7 FM, KMOX.com.
Back to the phones we go, and let's head over to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Can you tell me when's the best time to prune a mimosa tree?
Basically, they're pretty tough and durable. You want to prune it because of, is it detrimental to any kind of building or anything like that?
Well, I don't want it getting in the power lines.
Oh. Well, I mean, you can really prune them any time that you want to, but since, you know, with their summer flowering and everything else, from this point, meaning anything that blooms in the summertime, you can prune in the fall with no problem as far as disrupting the flowering for the following summertime. So,
okay.
All the way through now, all the way up until, let's say, until you don't want to go out because it's too cold and do the pruning, you can prune them.
Okay. All right. That'll work.
Right. Yeah, that's
okay.
With anything that's a summer bloomer, you can prune in the fall, not a problem. But things that bloom in this, you know, in the springtime, if you prune in the fall, you're basically cutting off the flowers for that following springtime. So, thank you, Carol. And let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks so much for your support. I've got a tall fescue lawn, and on the western slope of my hill, I've been getting this grass for the last number of years. It's growing. And I took a section of it into the Missouri Extension office when I went and got my soil tested. Mm-hmm. And they think it may be annual bluegrass. And so what they recommended was this fall I put down a pre-emergent,
right,
which I can do, seeding in some of those areas, but I can work around that. So my question is, how late can I put that pre-emergent down and still be effective?
Basically, if you do it too late, because we're kind of on the cusp of being too late already. Then what you're doing is the seed is already germinated, so the pre-emergence is not going to do anything. So you'd just be wasting your time and energy. That's where the trouble comes in. So basically, mid to late August is the best time to get the pre-emergent down, you know, to control something like an annual bluegrass.
Okay, and so that will control the spread. This comes back every year.
Right.
And
because it drops
growing.
Seed.
So, if I do that next year, will it kill it, or do I need to then kill the existing grass with some herbicide?
No, you don't need to kill. If it's the annual bluegrass, you can. It's going to take probably a couple years. But what it does is it's growing along, and then it's dropping seed, and that's what the seed that it drops, that's the seed that comes up the following year. So it's self-seeding itself.
Okay. So it's seeding the areas it's got, and then it's spreading because that seed is spreading out as it, almost like zoysia, where it continues to grow.
Right.
Get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Zoysia grows by rhizomes, root system. This grows by just dropping seeds a little bit further away from the plant that the seeds fell from.
So when I pick this, when I go to pull this up, it kind of pulls up almost like a carpet. Does that indicate that it's annual bluegrass, or is that? Could there be something? Because they were struggling. They were struggling trying to identify what it was.
Yeah. Generally, it can be that way. It could be individual plants. But, if they're saying that that's what it is, then I would say they're probably right. Because I can't see it. I have annual bluegrass in my zoysia, so I know what it looks like. But it can be, kind of create a carpeting circumstance.
Yeah, because when I pull it, it's almost like when I pull up, if you have like creeping red fescue, when you pull a creeping red fescue,
right.
You can pull up. It's almost like that, except I know it's not creeping red.
Okay. So it sounds like you've got the right attitude. It's just going to take a couple years to finally get rid of it. It's not going to be just one-year application.
Okay, yeah, because last year there was a big section. I killed it off with Roundup. I planted sodded seed. And it doesn't seem like it's coming back there, but I still see it on the fringes of where I did it. So it's like whack-a-mole, right? You just whack someplace and show up someplace else.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your service. I really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Carl's yard. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Mike. We've got a Cherokee Princess dogwood, about 20 feet tall, 25 to 30 years old. It started, I think, the previous spring, and then this last spring, now the very top of the tree, say 3 feet of the tree, the branches are either dead or dying, which I believe is weather-related. But as a result of this, I have what I will call sucker branches that are all over the middle inside of the tree.
Right.
Should I trim those out, and if so, when?
You can prune them, but you don't need to. And it could be, just that particular variety of dogwood, because it is a hybrid, it does have a somewhat of a limited life. So it could be the branches are dying off just the fact that it's, getting old, let's put it that way. And then the tree doesn't really want to, let's say, give up the root system, the trunk, and everything else, and that's why it's sending out that sucker growth. So you can prune all that sucker growth off. You don't have to. It's really a personal call as much as anything. But the sucker growth is probably going to be multiple years before you're going to start to see any kind of flowering on that at all.
Okay. Then to the core aeration with compost and seed, do you have a recommended height to mow the lawn prior to that?
Probably about a cool season lawn. I would cut it about probably 3.5 inches.
Okay, yeah, I keep it at 3.5 this time of the year,
okay.
And I was just curious. I've heard, people cutting it down to 2 inches before they core aerate, and that didn't sound like anything I wanted to do to my lawn.
No, because basically then you expose a crown, to more intense sun, and even though the days are getting cooler and everything else, you could really do some damage to the crowns of your plants by mowing it that tight, that close.
Okay, and then what do you have a recommendation for the best type of seed to put down for our climate?
To me, it doesn't matter. You can choose the type of seed you want, but always get a blend. Don't get if you're getting bluegrass, just don't get a straight bluegrass. Get a blend of bluegrass or fescue or whatever you happen to be wanting to put down.
Okay, and then one more thing, soil test. I can't recommend that enough. Several years ago, I was fertilizing every 4 to 6 weeks to keep my lawn green and mowing, and then I followed your advice, had a soil test done, and found out that my pH was around 5.
Ooh.
yeah, So over the last 3 years, I've put lime down, and now I'm right about this. I just had it tested in March, and I'm right at about 6.7. And the difference is now I fertilize twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall.
Right.
And it grows, and I mow it, at least once a week, if not more.
Right.
So just a recommendation to have a soil test done so you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, because of low, lawns like their pH, the best, soil pH is about 6.5, so you got it right at the optimum point.
Yeah, my understanding was with the low pH, you had all the nutrients in the soil, but the grass isn't able to use the nutrients.
Right, exactly. It can't interpret that the nutrients are there, so that's what gets things goofed up.
All right, Mike, thanks for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, and I mean, that's really important with this soil pH thing, to find out exactly what it is. I was at a house the other day, and they had a soil test done, and their soil pH was like 5.6, and that's kind of at the very low end of having adequate lawn circumstance. So I guess we're going to go ahead and take a break. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
April 9th, 2001.
Swing and a home run to left. The first Major League home run for Albert Pujols.
Now.
It's a goner. Albert Pujols, number 694.
The pursuit for 700 continues.
He is absolutely amazing.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Yes, folks, back to the phones, and let's head over to Sandy's yard. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike. We are moving, downsizing just about, so we're going about 5 miles from our home now. But there's a couple of plants that are real special to me and I need to take with me. One is like a rose bush, a snowball bush, and a couple of other outside plants. But to transplant them this time of the year, what are my chances of keeping them alive?
Ooh. At your new home, you got to get that location, the soil prepared and everything else. So before you dig them up in your existing home. So in other words, unless you can basically dig them up and find some large pots to put them in and, keep them in the pot until you can get the new locations, ready. But, it could be a little bit, a little bit tough.
Yeah. Should I keep them in pots all winter?
If you want to keep them in pots all winter, that's fine. But what you should do is dig a hole and then drop the pot down into the hole. Just leave the top inch or so of the pot above the surrounding ground.
Okay. I guess I don't know how to prepare the soil then at the new house.
Well, you're going to have to add without knowing the soil or anything else, ideally you would have already had a soil test done, but you haven't. But just adding some organic matter to the existing soil is going to be to the advantage of, of your plants.
Okay, and then with the winter weather coming, would the roots be safe? Or?
Well, actually the ground is still warm. This is the ideal time to transplant or to plant new plant material because the ground is warm. That triggers root growth circumstance, and then the plants go to sleep for the wintertime. So that's why fall is by far much better than spring for planting.
Okay. All right. Well, wish me luck. Cross your fingers, and thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck. And now let's go to Catherine's. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. My son has a next-door neighbor who has beautiful crepe myrtle trees planted along his fence line, and they're growing over into my son's yard, and it's causing a problem for him because it's dropping a lot of flowers, and he has a pool. And he would like to cut back the branches in his yard, but he doesn't want to damage the tree. And also, he lives in Texas, so I know that's a different climate than St. Louis. So
right.
Do you have any recommendations?
Basically, We can't grow crepe myrtle trees here, but we grow crepe myrtle shrubs. But in essence, he can prune those branches that are, you know, overhanging on, you know, his, basically his pool or his side of the fence. And, you know, it shouldn't be problematic for him. I wouldn't think so. Unless what happens is when he prunes it back, the new growth is going to head in that direction again because there's more sunlight, and that's why his pool is there too. So if the growth of the crepe myrtle is more, let's say, exaggerated going in that direction, then it's going to solve the problem for a couple of years, but he's just going to have to stay on top of it on a routine basis.
Okay. Well, when he is there a certain time of year that he should prune, that he should cut these?
No, I would say he can do it any time. They're evergreen there, so it's not like, you know, you want to do it during when after foliage has fallen off, like with the deciduous stuff. And so he could probably, I wouldn't do it in the heat of the summertime, but other than that, I wouldn't have a problem doing it any other time.
Okay, and it won't damage the tree? Because, you know, he doesn't want to do any damage to the tree. It's not his, but he can't. It's really causing a problem in his pool.
Right. So, I mean, he has really no choice. It's if the trees are healthy and everything else, and like I said, the main amount of sunlight that they're using or getting is coming, you know, because of the sunlight is not being interrupted because he has a pool on the other side. There's not, you know, competition with other trees creating shade. Then he should be okay.
Okay. Is there any specific way he should, I mean, look for any point on the branches, like at certain points that should be trimmed, or it doesn't matter?
It does matter. Just don't leave stubs. Don't leave like 6 or 8 inch stubs. So cut it back all the way to the intersection of what branch he's cutting off, whatever it's connected to.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And that's when you're pruning anything. You don't want to leave stubs on any kind of thing, whether it's in Texas or whether it's here. So now let's go. Where should we head? Let's go over to Cliff's yard. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I got a couple questions about peonies. I have, first of all, it's time to cut them back, right?
Your foliage is going down or they're laying over, so yeah, you could do it now.
They're still kind of green, but I think I need to cut them back anyway. I need to transplant an older peony, and you've gone through this procedure of transplanting peonies before, but I can't quite remember. Would you please repeat it?
Sure. Basically, water it the night before, dig it up, and just leave it sitting above the ground for about a day or so. And the reason why you're doing that, when you first dig them up, their root systems are really brittle, and they could break real easily, and that could cause some major damage. So after they've sat above the ground, you know, you don't have to do anything else to them while they're sitting above the ground. Or you can put them on a piece of burlap or something like that if you want to. Then you can, you know, move them to the new location. And just make sure that the peony eyes are only about an inch below the surface of the soil where you're relocating. Because if you plant them too deep, those, you know, the eyes, then what's going to happen is you're going to get foliage, but it's going to interrupt the flowering process.
Okay. Right now they have sun, part shade, but I read where they like full sun. Is that correct?
Yes, they do like full sun.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I've got a grass question. Got a yard that's going into the second season, was doing great, and I've got an invasion of Bermuda grass. The yard is all fescue, and it's choking it out. The yard company, the lawn company that I use, so they can't even spray for Bermuda grass to kill it. What do you suggest?
If your lawn service, well, I don't understand why they can't spray, because there is an herbicide that will kill the Bermuda grass.
There is?
Yes.
Well, they're saying that it doesn't work.
Well, it's going to be... It's anything that you do with lawns here is somewhat of a roll of the dice. So, okay. I mean, you could go ahead and, tell them to try it and see what happens. Either that or just tell them, well, I want to have a, you know, get another lawn service that's willing to go ahead and, you know, try to get it under control. Either that or just
herbicide that's used.
Oh, either that or just, you know, forget it and it's going to be there and there's nothing you can do.
It'll choke out all the fescue.
That's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Sorry. And let's see if we can get Paul in. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya. Hey, I've got a mystery tree. I'm just curious to see if you're better than Mobot, who says they don't know what it is. I live on a river bluff, and most of my yard is back with old growth trees, walnuts, oaks. It's cool. Hickories. I cleared out a whole bunch of honeysuckle, and I got left a bunch of small understory-like trees that have a really smooth gray bark. They have, like, spiny branches, short ones, sticking out, and then as you get up higher, it gets more branches. But they say they don't know what it is, and I got a dozen of them.
Well, without being able to see it at all, it's a little bit difficult for me to take a guess. So,
okay.
Do you know what a hawthorn looks like? Do these branches have thorns on them?
They don't have thorns. They're spiky, but they don't have thorns.
Hmm.
And the leaves are small, maybe 2-2.5 inches. They're not arranged like the leaves on the walnut or the honeysuckle, where they're all lined up in nice, neat little lines.
Right.
But it's very, very smooth and kind of a pattern around the trunk as opposed to along with the trunk of two shades of gray.
What I would probably do is just wait and see if they give any kind of fall color, and that might be an indication or help you to determine what it is. Because, verbally, yeah. It's hard to guess.
Yeah, I'm seeing there's no flowers in the spring, and I got no berries or anything that I've seen anyway, but I'll keep an eye on them, see what color they turn. What color would they turn if they were hawthorn?
Kind of a yellowish-orange.
Okay. Well, thank you. Mobot had no guess, so thank you very much.
Of course, guessing is very easy.
Well, I haven't been able to do it so far.
Great. Well, thanks, Paul. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Rock on. Let's head over to Danny's yard. Hi, Danny. Danny, are you there? Danny? No. Where should we head then? Let's head over to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Question about euonymus. I called in before about this. I want to kill some of it. It's taking over the place. I sprayed it with Roundup. That didn't phase it. So I got brush killer, and that didn't phase it. What can I do to kill it out besides digging it?
Basically, if the Roundup for killing, brush killing Roundup didn't kill it, then this is really something. Probably the best thing to do is to walk on it or to this is a ground cover, right?
Yes. Well, I've got 3 acres, and it's all over the place.
Oh, so
I may have trouble walking on it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you want to do is open up some. You want to maybe take a mower and have somebody mow it, and you know, set the mower high. And what you want to do is open up some wounds or some open areas, and then spray the herbicide right after that.
I say, okay. Well, I thought the brush killer would do it for sure, but it didn't phase it.
Yeah, it's probably because the leaves are so slippery or slick that it probably just ran off. But by opening up wounds, you don't have to do all 3 acres at once. Just do a section at a time and give it a try where it's mowed, and then right after the mowing is done, spray the herbicide, spray the shrub killer. You know, Roundup.
It would follow the vein, follow the stem on back quite a ways. Okay, I'll try that. Thank you.
Sure. And let's see if we can go over to Joyce's yard. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about crepe myrtle bushes. My neighbor has some growing that are not where she wants them to be, and so she's going to dig them up. If I wanted to dig one up and put it in a big pot and not plant it till the spring, would that work?
You could do it, but you should probably, leaving the pot sitting above the ground may be detrimental. So you might have to dig a hole in a garden space and just drop the pot down into the hole, leave the top inch or so of the pot above the surrounding ground.
Okay.
So
All right. Thank you very much. It
may survive, you know, in a pot sitting above the ground, but that's why when you go to nurseries during the wintertime, they have them piled up with mulch or various things for protection, and you're not able to do it that way necessarily. It's just easier to dig a hole and drop the pot down into the hole.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now Greg, can you do it kind of quick?
Yeah. Hi, Mike. Good morning. I've been really challenged with wild violets this year. They really spread in my front yard. And in the fall, I normally, you know, reseed and then put compost down. Is there a timing mechanism where I can treat the wild violet before I do that, or do I have to wait another season?
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, if you got a broadleaf, have you tried other broadleaf weed killers with it?
I haven't yet. I was going to wait. Was told to wait till the fall, so I wanted to do that then.
So the best thing to do is make sure that the herbicide that the broadleaf weed killer you end up using says it will control the violets, and just realize that it's not going to control them 100%. So you're going to have to stay on top of this for a couple of years.
Right, but can I still reseed and during that time when I'm applying that, or should I wait to reseed for a season?
No, the seeding shouldn't have anything, you know, any impact as far as with a broadleaf weed killer. So that shouldn't be detrimental.
Okay, great. I really appreciate it. Great. Have a great holiday weekend.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I don't think we're going to be able to get to Wilson today. So, Wilson, if you call back a little bit earlier next week. But fall is here. I want to thank everybody for calling, you know, today and every day. And also, this is Labor Day weekend, so I want to make sure that everybody, though I don't quite understand exactly what Labor Day means, that, you know, I've been laboring for a long, long time, but we all work very hard in our professional life or our personal lives. So have a great Labor Day weekend. And as I said before, one of our favorite events has come back, which is a Greek Fest at the Greek Church in the West End. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back next week.
April 9th, 2001.
Swing and a home run to left. The first Major League home run for Albert Pujols.
Now,
it's a goner. Albert Pujols, number 694.
The pursuit for 700 continues.
He is absolutely amazing.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Yes, folks, back to the phones, and let's head over to Sandy's yard. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike. We are moving, downsizing just about, so we're going about 5 miles from our home now. But there's a couple of plants that are real special to me and I need to take with me. One is like a rose bush, a snowball bush, and a couple of other outside plants. But to transplant them this time of the year, what are my chances of keeping them alive?
Ooh. At your new home, you got to get that location, you know, the soil prepared and everything else. So before you dig them up in your existing home. So in other words, unless you can basically dig them up and find some large pots to put them in and, you know, keep them in the pot until you can get the new locations, you know, ready. But, it could be a little bit, you know, a little bit tough.
Yeah. Should I keep them in pots all winter?
If you want to keep them in pots all winter, that's fine. But what you should do is dig a hole and then drop the pot down into the hole. Just leave the top inch or so of the pot above the surrounding ground.
Okay. I don't know how to prepare the soil then at the new house.
Well, you're going to have to add a, you know, without knowing the soil or anything else, ideally you would have already had a soil test done, but you haven't. But just adding some organic matter to the existing soil is going to be to the advantage of, you know, of your plants.
Okay, and then with the winter weather coming, would the roots be safe? Or
well, actually, the roots, the ground is still warm. This is the ideal time to transplant or to plant new plant material because the ground is warm. That triggers root growth circumstance, and then the plants go to sleep for the wintertime. So that's why fall is by far much better than spring for planting.
Okay. All right. Well, wish me luck. Cross your fingers, and thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck. And now let's go to Catherine's. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. My son has a next-door neighbor who has beautiful crepe myrtle trees planted along his fence line, and they're growing over into my son's yard, and it's causing a problem for him because it's dropping a lot of flowers, and he has a pool. And he would like to cut back the branches in his yard, but he doesn't want to damage the tree. And also, he lives in Texas, so I know that's a different climate than St. Louis. So do you have any recommendations?
Basically, you know, we can't grow crepe myrtle trees here, but we grow crepe myrtle shrubs. But in essence, he can prune those branches that are, you know, overhanging on, you know, his, basically his pool or his side of the fence. And, you know, it shouldn't be problematic for him. I wouldn't think so. Unless what happens is when he prunes it back, the new growth is going to head in that direction again because there's more sunlight, and that's why his pool is there too. So if the growth of the crepe myrtle is more, let's say, exaggerated going in that direction, then it's going to solve the problem for a couple of years, but he's just going to have to stay on top of it on a routine basis.
Okay. Well, when is there a certain time of year that he should prune, that he should cut these?
No, I would say he can do it any time. They're evergreen there, so it's not like, you know, you want to do it during when after foliage has fallen off, like with the deciduous stuff. And so he could probably, I wouldn't do it in the heat of the summertime, but other than that, I wouldn't have a problem doing it any other time.
Okay, and it won't damage the tree because, you know, he doesn't want to do any damage to the tree. It's not his, but he can't. It's really causing a problem in his pool.
Right. So, I mean, he has really no choice. It's if the trees are healthy and everything else, and like I said, the main amount of sunlight that they're using or getting is coming, you know, because of the sunlight is not being interrupted because he has a pool on the other side. There's not, you know, competition with other trees creating shade. Then he should be okay.
Okay. Is there any specific way he should, I mean, look for any point on the branches, like at certain points it should be trimmed, or it doesn't matter?
It does matter. Just don't leave stubs. Don't leave like 6 or 8 inch stubs. So cut it back all the way to the intersection of what branch he's cutting off, whatever it's connected to.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And that's when you're pruning anything. You don't want to leave stubs on any kind of thing, whether it's in Texas or whether it's here. So now let's go. Where should we head? Let's go over to Cliff's yard. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I got a couple questions about peonies. I have, first of all, it's time to cut them back, right?
Foliage is going down, or they're laying over, so yeah, you could do it now.
They're still kind of green, but I think I need to cut them back anyway. I need to transplant an older peony, and you've gone through this procedure of transplanting peonies before, but I can't quite remember. Would you please repeat it?
Sure. Basically, water it the night before, dig it up, and just leave it sitting above the ground for about a day or so. And the reason why you're doing that, when you first dig them up, their root systems are really brittle, and they could break real easily, and that could cause some major damage. So after they've sat above the ground, you know, you don't have to do anything else to them while they're sitting above the ground, or you can put them on a piece of burlap or something like that if you want to. Then you can, you know, move them to the new location. and just make sure that the peony eyes are only about an inch below the surface of the soil where you're relocating. Because if you plant them too deep, those, you know, the eyes, then what's going to happen is you're going to get foliage, but it's going to interrupt the flowering process.
Okay. And right now they have sun, part shade. But I read where they like full sun. Is that correct?
Yes, they do like full sun.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I've got a grass question. Got a yard that's going into the second season, was doing great, and I've got an invasion of Bermuda grass. The yard is all fescue, and it's choking it out. The yard company, the lawn company that I use, so they can't even spray for Bermuda grass to kill it. What do you suggest?
If your lawn service, well, I don't understand why they can't spray, because there is an herbicide that will kill the Bermuda grass.
There is?
Yes.
Well, they're saying that it doesn't work.
Well, it's going to be, it's anytime, anything that you do with lawns here is somewhat of a roll of the dice. So, okay. I mean, you could go ahead and, go tell them to try it and see what happens. Either that or just tell them, well, I want to have a, get another lawn service that's willing to go ahead and, try to get it under control. Either that or just
herbicide that's used.
Either that or just, forget it and it's going to be there and there's nothing you can do.
It'll choke out all the fescue.
That's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Sorry. And let's see if we can get Paul in. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya. Hey, I've got a mystery tree. I'm just curious to see if you're better than Mobot, who says they don't know what it is. I live on a river bluff, and most of my yard is back with old growth trees, walnuts, oaks, it's cool, hickories. I cleared out a whole bunch of honeysuckle, and I got left a bunch of small understory-like trees that have a really smooth gray bark. They have, like, spiny branches, short ones, sticking out, and then as you get up higher, it gets more branches. But they say they don't know what it is, and I got a dozen of them.
Well, without being able to see it at all, it's a little bit difficult for me to take a guess. So,
okay,
do you know what a hawthorn looks like? Do these branches have thorns on them?
They don't have thorns. They're spiky, but they don't have thorns.
Hmm.
And the leaves are small, maybe 2-2.5 inches. They're not arranged like the leaves on the walnut or the honeysuckle, where they're all lined up in nice, neat little lines.
Right.
But it's very, very smooth and kind of a pattern around the trunk as opposed to along with the trunk of two shades of gray.
What I would probably do is just wait and see if they give any kind of fall color. And that might be an indication or help you to determine what it is. Because, just
kind of understand.
Verbally, yeah. It's hard to guess.
Yeah, I'm seeing there's no flowers in the spring, and I got no berries or anything that I've seen anyway, but I'll keep an eye on them, see what color they turn. What color would they turn if they were hawthorns?
Kind of a yellowish orange.
Okay. Well, thank you. Mobot had no guess, so thank you very much.
Of course, guessing is very easy.
Well, I haven't been able to do it so far.
Great. Well, thanks, Paul. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Rock on. Let's head over to Danny's yard. Hi, Danny. Danny, are you there? Danny? No. Where should we head then? Let's head over to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Question about euonymus. I called in before about this. I want to kill some of it. It's taking over the place.
I sprayed it with Roundup. That didn't faze it. So I got brush killer, and that didn't faze it. What can I do to kill it out besides digging it?
Basically, if the Roundup for killing, brush killing Roundup didn't kill it, then this is really something. Probably the best thing to do is to walk on it or to this is a ground cover, right?
Yes. Well, I've got 3 acres and it's all over the place.
Oh. So
I may have trouble walking on it.
Yeah. I mean, you want to do is open up some, you want to maybe take a mower and have somebody mow it. And, you know, set the mower high. And what you want to do is open up some wounds or some open areas and then spray the herbicide right after that.
I see. Okay. Well, I thought the brush killer would do it for sure, but it didn't faze it.
Yeah, it's probably because the leaves are so slippery or slick that it probably just ran off. But by opening up wounds, you don't have to do all 3 acres at once. Just do a section at a time and give it a try. Where it's mowed, and then right after the mowing is done, spray the herbicide. Spray the shrub killer, you know, Roundup.
It would follow the vein, follow the stem on back quite a ways. Okay, I'll try that. Thank you.
Sure. And let's see if we can go over to Joyce's yard. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about crepe myrtle bushes. My neighbor has some growing that are not where she wants them to be, and so she's going to dig them up. If I wanted to dig one up and put it in a big pot and not plant it till the spring, would that work?
You could do it, but you should probably, leaving the pot sitting above the ground may be detrimental. So you might have to dig a hole in a garden space and just drop the pot down into the hole, leave the top inch or so of the pot above the surrounding ground.
Okay.
So,
all right. Thank you very much.
It may survive, you know, in a pot sitting above the ground, but that's why when you go to nurseries during the wintertime, they have them piled up with mulch or various things for protection, and you're not able to do it that way necessarily. It's just easier to dig a hole and drop the pot down into the hole.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now, Greg, can you do it kind of quick?
Yeah. Hi, Mike. Good morning. I've been really challenged with wild violets this year. They really spread in my front yard. And in the fall, I normally, you know, reseed and then put compost down. Is there a timing mechanism where I can treat the wild violet before I do that, or do I have to wait another season?
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, if you got a broadleaf, have you tried other broadleaf weed killers with it?
I haven't yet. I was going to wait. Was told to wait till the fall, so I wanted to do that then.
So the best thing to do is make sure that the herbicide that the broadleaf weed killer you end up using says it will control the violets, and just realize that it's not going to control them 100%. So you're going to have to stay on top of this for a couple of years.
Right, but can I still reseed and during that time when I'm applying that, or should I wait to reseed for a season?
No, the seeding shouldn't have anything, you know, any impact as far as with a broadleaf weed killer. So that shouldn't be detrimental.
Okay, great. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Have a great holiday weekend.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I don't think we're going to be able to get to Wilson today. So Wilson, if you call back a little bit earlier next week, but fall is here. I want to thank everybody for calling, you know, today and every day. And also, this is Labor Day weekend, so I want to make sure that everybody, though I don't quite understand exactly what Labor Day means, that, you know, I've been laboring for a long, long time, but we all work very hard in our professional life or our personal lives. So have a great Labor Day weekend. And as I said before, one of our favorite events has come back, which is a Greek fest at the Greek Church in the West End. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back next week.